It's Tuesday, September 7th, 2010. This is Wendy Erickson. I'm a reference librarian at the Parchment Community Library. And today we're doing an oral history with Roy Stafford. So, Roy, when and where were you born?
I was born in Kalamazoo, Michigan in 1947 at Borges Hospital.
Where do you live today?
I live in Schoolcraft, Michigan since 1970. It's been 40 years. Yes.
Out there, 40 years out there. And what is your personal connection to the Parchment area?
The personal would be when I got out of the service in 1968, I wanted a job, and my father and grandfather all worked across the river at the other Sutherland plant. And so I'm just kind of like the third one to get a job. That I got a job in December of 68 in Mill 1 in the beater room, and I remember Al Perlick was the superintendent or supervisor. So that is all the way from, and I was living in Kalamazoo.
Okay.
So he got me a job at the paper mill.
And you worked there how long?
I worked there for 32 years, from December 68 until October 2000, when they finally shut the doors.
That's right. And did you have a lot of different jobs at the plant?
I had a lot of jobs. I went from the beater room. I signed on to a new department. It was in Mill 1. It had something to do with coding. And from there, I went to the crepe machine and wax machine. And then I went to the parchment machine room, which at that time was probably the most undesirable place to work because of the acid, but I liked a challenge.
Ah.
So I worked there, and while I was working there, I had signed other jobs for like a formulator, a dope mixer, a paper tester. I had worked in the rewinder department as a bailerman, rewinder helper. I worked in finishing department. Cutter operator, a finisher. I worked on the paper machines in Mill 1 also, all the way up to fourth hand, third hand, a janitor. I went to Mill 2 in 1995 when the Mill 1 had went down. I went up there in the paper machines as a rollman, fourth hand, third hand, progressed up. There was probably a lot of jobs that I probably didn't do. And then the biggest one out of a lot of those was for 12 years, I was, it was at least 12 years, recording secretary for local 323, so I got to know a lot of people.
Yeah, what was that union work like?
It was, I enjoyed it. I had started going to union meetings shortly after, and that's what you did. You had to 30 days after you worked here, you had to join the union.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been in early 69. And I like to listen to people. I like to think I'm kind of a people person. But anyway, there was a couple things that, for some reason, at just being 21 years old out of the service and being kind of molded by the Uncle Sam or whatever, and here's a structured union. And there was a couple of things that I didn't didn't think I liked, or a lot of people had said, you know, this is where you go to bring your differences up. And just from going to the, and I don't know if it was just to shut me up or whatever, but after a couple months, there was elections were being held. And but anyway, in my department, they elected me steward. I was kind of the voice of the people there. And you know, there was I was all about getting, you know, what does the union way back when it was, what does the union do for me? Well, it's just like to take a quote from John Kennedy. You know, it's something, what can you do for, you know, instead
ask
of
not
what you,
what your union can do for you,
but what you can do for. And so I said, you know what, that's pretty good advice. So I ran for a recording secretary and probably held that position for at least 12 or 18 years or whatever. But that's how I kind of got started in the union work, because I always was looking for, everybody needed representation, and I just figured that was my calling, because I like to open my mouth, so, but anyway.
You had ideas and comments on what, like the way things were done, or
it was, you know, after you get involved in the union, it was more or less representation, because even though at that time KVP was a great place to work for, you know, contract times would come up, and there was always issues in the plant or mill. Whether they be safety, whether they be overtime, equal representation, being consistent with the way the company did things. I, if anything, I was big on the idea of, if you're going to do something, be consistent with what you do. Just because one person or one woman, you treat them a certain way, and I was all about bringing that together and make it more workable.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember, and this is a lesson, a valuable lesson I learned from George Rosie. He was in Mill 1 as a foreman, and George was a big veteran from World War II. But anyway, what he had told me was, every time I'd go in there arguing about, for someone in the parchment machine room, about how you did this against them and it's not fair, blah, blah, blah. And I would really come off the handle a lot. And I've learned, and what he told me was, Roy, the softer you speak, the harder I listen. And that will always stick with me, because I'm in there ranting and raving, and you know what? He probably just turned his hearing down, because, and that made a lot of sense to me. Mm-hmm. So if nothing else, as far as the union, you know what? Kill him with kindness. I mean, you know, you know what your facts are. You get it out on the table, and that was a valuable lesson on that. So.
Did you sit in on, I don't know what recording secretaries sit in on, you know, when they air grievances and decide grievances, you'd probably have to record that, wouldn't you?
Yes. I was a part of the grievance. We had grievances it was either every Tuesday or Wednesday.
Oh, they were scheduled sessions.
They were scheduled with a whole, all of 323, the different departments, whether they be maintenance, paper machines, any grievance that that had made it through the first step that couldn't be righted or whatever.
Yeah.
And if the person wanted it, go to the grievance procedure. We had those. And yes, my main job was to record all the grievances. And when it got into our monthly, also our our meetings, our union meetings. Being a recording secretary, I took minutes and notes of every meeting, no matter what business come up or the way things are handled. I mean, I actually made notes of the whole meeting.
Sure.
And when we got into negotiations at that time, we're every 2 to 3 years, somewhere down, whatever the length of our contract was. And obviously I was a the whole union board, which the secretary, recording secretary, took all of those minutes. And the highlight of that came when there was a certain individual that had wanted to take the union to court. And I mean, he had exhausted all of his steps in the grievance procedure through the local. He wasn't happy, and he actually wanted to take the union. And this was in Grand Rapids. Right now I can't tell you what step it was, what part of the court system.
Yeah.
But the beauty of, I say the beauty of it was, my notes and minutes of every grievance, every step that we had taken, the attorney up there for the union, and that was that made me feel like I was definitely wanted. We had won that case just because of the scripted notes that I took for those years.
Yes.
And he come up and he thanked me that, for obvious reasons, saved us a lot of a lot of money. So, yeah, that was a good deal.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And how long were you steward?
Oh, boy. Let me see. I wasn't steward that long. It was within a year, only because they had elections and I wanted to go to something else. I was never a chief steward.
Okay.
What
section of the mill? What department were you steward?
This was
for?
Mill one in the parchment machine room.
Oh yeah. Okay.
You know, and a steward, they do all of the legwork with whatever problems are going on. If they can't get a settlement first step, what we used to call it, with the immediate supervisor, and the person that put the grievance in wasn't happy, then it went to the chief steward of the department, which could be a 3-department area, and then they handled it with the manager of that area.
Okay.
And then if there was no resolution there, then it went to the grievance procedure at the table with a company on one side and a union on the other, with the person that put the grievance in, and try to get it resolved that way.
There was never a strike on your watch, was there? Was there a strike in that time period?
Yes.
There was?
Yeah, well, yes. We had come to an impasse on contract, but yes, there...
Do you remember the year?
It would have been... I've kind of lost that right now, but...
You became... Well, let's back up a minute. How long had you been there before you became steward or recording secretary? Had you been there for a while, or was this pretty fast?
No, it was, I started in 68, joined the union in like January or February of 69. I'm assuming that I went it'd been about 4 years. It could have been as early as 73.
All right.
72 or 73, I may have been a steward in the parchment machine room. By that time, I was in the parchment machine room.
Okay.
And then probably, I remember Dale Pierce, who worked in the quality lab, which is a job I had always admired, the quality end of it, because that way you would normally keep all your fingers and everything else.
Yeah,
because
strong
you're
consideration.
Separated
yeah.
After all the years of knowing people that got hurt, maimed, whatever.
Really, yes.
Dale was the acting recording secretary, and he didn't want it anymore. And
okay.
This would have been
yeah.
the middle of 75, possibly.
Okay.
And that's when I ran for recording secretary. And there were some other people that ran too, and I was fortunate enough to get the
mm-hmm.
the votes
mm-hmm.
To take that position.
Okay. So the strike, sometime.
It would have been
during that 12 years.
It would have been. It could have been around 80-ish.
Oh, after. You were a recording secretary,
oh, yes.
not when
yes.
you were.
No,
I see.
No, yes.
Okay.
This would have been.
Okay.
This would have been, and I wish I could tell you right now, and I've lost because we had the Union Hall right over in Parchment there, where Pace is now, and next to Scooter D's, that
yes.
little strip.
Sure.
We actually had, that was the strike headquarters
mm-hmm.
while we were out. We weren't out that long, but that's when people come over there and signed up for
yeah,
hours.
That's
to,
right. Was this just
it.
A matter of weeks
yes.
that the strike
yeah.
went on that long?
And that's something I...
What was the weather like?
Well, it was...
Do you
was,
remember? Was it snowing?
It was...
Cold? Or?
It was cold.
It was cold.
In the... Because we'd always said our contract, I want to say, well, believe it or not, was up like July. I want to say July 31st.
Mm-hmm.
But we, it might have even went... And I right now I'm not... A couple months. But, you know, it was the fall... It must have been chilly at night because some people had a little drum, 55-gallon drum
yeah.
fires going.
Oh, sure. Okay.
But I think we did those in four-hour increments is what you did.
Yeah.
And you had to stand, you had to do strike duty in order to get the strike pay at that
yes.
time, which was only $55. That was something.
Sure.
And we had other, our sister local, 1010. We had other companies bring foodstuffs in.
Mm-hmm.
We had mothers or that from the workers that may have needed diapers and everything. But anyway, we had a whole
oh.
nice deal to where
yeah.
people could actually come in and... And Checker Motors even helped us out while we were out on strike for a while. And
what
was,
did they do?
Pardon?
Back and forth? Drive you back and forth or take you home? Or
well, they had come to help us. Sometimes they would stand with us or they would bring in
oh.
foodstuffs at the local hall. So our workers that needed hmm. different things would... help us out, if you
yeah.
will.
Yeah.
I wouldn't swear to it. There might have been one or, and one of them was very quick, but there might have been two times that this happened, and one of them was pretty quick that when it happened. So we weren't out for all that long.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
If I think of.
Was there a lot of rancor?
Pardon?
Hard feelings? Were there a lot of hard feelings when people would go out on strike? And
you know, the it was basically, and it wasn't about money. It was about benefits.
Okay.
It was about paying more for your medical
sure.
and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing like it was today, but back then, you really don't go out over money. We always figured, you know what, you'll make your money up during the year, whether it be overtime, holiday pay.
Okay.
But what really was close to everybody's heart back then and feelings was the medical, the insurance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the company, for obvious reasons, wanted us to pay more.
Yes. Yep.
And some people just figured with the amount of money that they made per hour,
mm-hmm.
they figured it was too much. And so it wasn't just the union, but we're kind of mandated by what the members want.
Yes,
and
sure.
when we had a meeting at the Parchment High School, because we would meet with them at least weekly, to let them know how we're going in negotiations. And when we got to a point where we were stymied or we felt we couldn't go any further, then it was up to them to say, you know what, here's what we want, here's what we don't mind being out. And we would go into negotiate. I mean, sometimes it was literally near the end of the negotiations, it was all night. I mean, you'd get together at 9 in the morning, and I'm here to tell you, it would be 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. I used to think it used to be a test of who could last the longest,
endurance,
if you will.
Yeah.
But when you looked at some of the, and excuse me, the older people at that time, like I am now, that were just finding it hard to stay awake,
who ran those? They didn't get to the stage of like the National Labor Relations Board, didn't get that serious. Did you have attorneys for either side doing most of the negotiating?
We had our international rep at that time was Claire Ann, and then the international person above them, I remember a Nick Vraterik, and this guy was, and I say it in a nice way, but when you hear about unions from eons past,
yes,
about how they got things done,
tough
and
guys.
Or the tough type of, and Nick Vraterik was every bit of that.
Ah.
He would sit there like a bulldog, and he was Italian.
Oh.
And he'd look right across in the table, and he'd say something like, "What are we doing here?" And the poor people from the company's side, "Well, we're at an impasse with this and this," and he would stand up and, "You know what, I've got 20 other locals in this whole region, blah, 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 and I'm here to tell you, not one of them is going to stand on or stand for whatever. This is going on. Nick was a very good person from the international echelon to have there for us. And our international rep at that time, Claire Ann, and, who I think still lives in the Scotts area, he serviced both unions. So Claire was like our attorney, if you will.
Yeah.
He's a union member.
Okay.
Made it from the ranks all the way up.
All right.
We always had our union board, which is about 12 of us, I think.
Yeah.
Our union board, our international representative, and then the higher up. When it got so bad that we weren't moving with our international rep with a company, when you had to call international headquarters, then things just started to either hurry up or whatever.
Okay.
But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So lots of involvement, lots of activity all the time with the union.
Lots of activity.
Lots of people coming to talk to you.
Taken, and you know, basically a lot of the chief stewards when we first negotiate, a lot of the chief stewards and their departments, if you will. You know, there's overtime language, there's just a lot of things that happen within a department. It's kind of structured deal. That kind of stuff is dealt with at the early stages of negotiations, the problems or the crux of the negotiations is anytime you get into benefits and wages. And that is the kind of talk that we in the company didn't used to always agree upon. But the language in the departments, that's the first thing we took care of. And when we got into benefits and wages, those are things that's near and dear to us and the company, because they basically pay quite a share of that.
Yeah.
That's what usually made us go a little bit longer than than we needed to.
Yeah.
But it was very, that's a part of negotiating I liked. I, you know, when you deal with it for so long, and it's just kind of like you're, in a good kind of way, you're butting heads.
Sure.
Until you get, and that's when you get, when you go for like 6, 7, 8 hours on something and take a recess, a break, and come back, do your mini homework, and come back. It's, I really think, after all these years, it's whoever lasted the longest. I hate to, I say it in a good way, but you know, they're fighting for something, we're fighting for something, and I've always maintained, in a good way, the company was absolutely a great place, a great company to work for all these years. I don't even remember anybody having charge cards. I mean, I say this in a good way. They were pretty much open with us all the time. They were to a degree, when you, unless you got in a different person that come in here that took over someone else's spot, they had their own little way of doing things. But for the most part, they were good people to work with, and we made good money working there. I think 31, fact is I know this, and I don't know why I'm bringing it up now, 31 out of the 32 years I worked there was 7 days a week. And I'm here to tell you, it took a lot. The money was great. It probably cost me a marriage. My daughter's...
7 days a week?
7 days a week.
For that long a time, I had not heard that.
Oh, it's some of these guys. There was one, and don't get me wrong, I was always there ready to work the extra time or whatever.
Yeah.
If there was ever, and for the 31 out of 32 weeks saying this, a lot of that was a paper machine schedule, was a four-crew schedule. There were different things. You may work 5 or 6 days and actually have a day off in the schedule, but me and like a lot of other people would always volunteer to work that additional day. And... I just remember at Mill 1, where when Rick Larrick was a mill manager, that he kind of come down, and because they all had to keep track of cost, and he basically said, we're running 5 days a week. And that's probably the best time I ever had. It was probably the shortest and the pay I've ever made. But you figured when you worked 7 days a week, basically it was 68 hours a week was just the straight time part. And when you add on the time and a half and double time, and a lot of us would work 16 or 20 hours on a Sunday because it was double time, you know, the money was great. But we just, I would go home after working 16 hours and because I had to get up like 5 or 6 hours later to go into work on another shift. And they would call me after I'd just laid down for 2 or 3 hours and say, Roy, do you want to come in 4 hours? And my poor wife at that time would say, Roy, you can't. But I would go in. And it just, it, I was chasing the almighty dollar, if you will.
Yeah. Do you have second thoughts about that now? Like, what was I thinking? Or,
you know,
I know that money was good.
My wife, thank God, who I've been married to now for 23 years, mm-hmm. When my boys were born, she had kind of reminded me of what happened, you know, what I told her years before.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm not saying it had a lot to do with it, but, you know, now I've got heart problems. I've known a lot of good people that used to work like I did, and a lot of other people did, and because of working in formulation or whatever, they're not here anymore. They've had mm-hmm. one sort of another of cancer, and if anything else, I think it just beat me down a little bit, if you will. It's hard for me to sometimes relax, because when I go into the, and I mean, for 31 years, was shift work. You worked 11 to 7 one week, 3 to 11 the next week, and days the next week, and you started that whole process again, and then add on to the overtime and everything else that we went way and above. You know, you thought about it. I spent more time, and I don't regret this, there's a lot of people there that were just like family. Well, you think about it. When you work 12 and 16 hours a day with someone and you go home, and it doesn't say a lot about your home life, and that's a bad thing, and then go back into work.
Right.
I mean, we fished, we hunted, we played.
Yeah.
We worked together.
Yeah.
We did a lot together, and but anyway,
spent more time with your coworkers than your family in those days.
And that in those days, it did. We were there. We celebrated the birth of our kids at that time, and when hunting season got there, kind of a joke. Or somebody, my family had told Harriet when we got married in 87, as they said, Harriet, do you know that Roy likes to hunt? And she said, yeah, she told me that, because I'm here to tell you, back then I worked, and I would work 16 hours, get out in the morning, I'd already have my hunting gear in the truck, and I would go out and hunt 5-6 hours, just in time to get home and change and go back. So it was just it was a blur back then. We did what we did,
right?
And who knows, maybe I'm paying for it today, but it was fun. It was
speaking of all the extracurricular kind of stuff you did you play in any of the KVP sports teams?
Yes.
What'd you do?
We played softball for the longest time. We started a league in the back of Mill 2 over there. There's some names, but I mean, it was pretty rough.
Mm-hmm.
We played softball over there. Then we graduated 2 years later to Kindleberger Park.
Yes.
And in the mid, and I mean, for the 70s, in the Parchment Machine Room, a bunch of us played at Dickinson Field in downtown. And the first year in the class that we were in, we won the league championship the first year.
Do you remember what year that was?
Pardon?
Do you remember the year?
It was mid or latter
70s, okay.
And I wish I almost had the name of the team, because one guy that worked in the Parchment Machine Room's dad or uncle owned this company and sponsored us. And anyway, all the trophies I had from golf, for softball.
Oh, golf too? KVP golf?
Yes.
Yes?
Everything was destroyed in a barn fire I had.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But anyway, I played in golf leagues for KVP, and I played with my dad for a while because he was across the river. Mm-hmm. I know I played with Dale Cowles, and he was a supervisor, and I played together. And it was kind of funny after that. I mean, we got along with everyone. Our supervisors and us, you couldn't hardly tell us apart.
Yeah.
But I do know that someone from the upper echelon had said something to Dale, and Dale told me that he was instructed that he can't play with one of the union. I was fine with that because at that time there was another different thinking manager that come in, and maybe that's
okay.
Who knows? Maybe it was close to contract time or whatever.
Yeah.
But I remember the Smeltzers, Brian and Bob, and Bob just passed away. Bob was huge on softball. And we had a traveling league. I know the Fox Den, a place in Augusta, I think, was a little bar, but that was a sponsor of ours.
Uh-huh.
And we played all over. So I did the golf. I did the softball.
Did you bowl?
Oh, yes.
Bowling?
Plus
yes.
And a good thing about that is the Thursday night league, our bowling league, I'm here to tell you, I am the last and only one left from the mill still bowling there. And I'm president of that league.
Oh.
But, I mean, we started that in 1970. So, you know, it's been, this is 40 years.
It is.
A lot of guys that bowl there have went on and or other things that had happened. But of mm-hmm. all the people, out of 40 guys, there's 8 teams, I am the last one left of that league left.
Okay.
So that's pretty neat. So, yeah. And then for a while there, we did the Corporate Olympics. I swam, bicycled.
KVP had a team in the Corporate Olympics.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
And again, you swam and biked?
Yes, and biked.
Okay.
And I remember that was kind of neat. Fact is, you know what? That's when James River had taken over because they gave us sweats. And I still have those with James River down the side. And I figure one of these days, you know what? Who knows? There's a little bit of history. But, you know, I was in a lot of different things. I didn't know how to take a break, if you will.
I guess,
so
yeah.
Anyway.
Did you live in Parchment when you worked at KVP? Where'd you live?
No, I all in Schoolcraft.
Oh, you lived in Schoolcraft the whole time.
All that time in school. So it was 30 minutes to get to work every day.
Sure.
But the best thing about the softball, and after being competitive in a couple different teams, and I said, you know what? And I had just gotten divorced. It had been like 3 or 4 years. And I met my wife now. They needed a couple more female players for the softball team.
Okay.
And so I'm out there, and this one guy that worked in Mill 2 said he was going to bring his sister. And you know, so anyway, he brought his sister, and they put her out next to me, and she was very athletic. I mean, Harriet did the golf, she did the tennis.
Yeah.
She did all of that
yes.
stuff. And anyway, I was kind of shadowing her and helping her out in the outfield.
Yeah.
And when we got done playing, we'd always got together and shook hands with the other team.
Uh-huh.
Well, when she come through on our team and shook my hand, she wouldn't let go. And boy, just something went off into my head. And I said, Roy, you've got to follow this up. So we went to one of the watering holes on Douglas. It wasn't the Silver Moon. It was the other one. But anyway, we were having iced tea or whatever, Harriet was talking with another woman there to her left, and I was next to her, to her right, and I had heard her say that she had been divorced for a year or two. And I'm not kidding you, the world's largest light bulb went off in my head. I asked her for a date, and we went to a place on Westnage that's not there anymore because they had a really neat booth. Yeah. I brought a flower, a rose, and something else, a little gift. And that was kind of the start of it. She said, well, she needed a ride to the airport. She's going to see her brother in California. So I said, no problem. I drove her all the way up there. She was in line to go on the plane. I'm standing way back there. And I said, the heck with it, Roy. I ran right up through everyone in the line. I gave her a big hug. She gave me one back, and I thought about it all the way back home. And I got a card from her like about 4 days later. Yeah. And what she had did on the beach with a stick, she had made a huge heart and put Roy and Harriet on it. And I just
I hardly knew her,
uh-huh. And I'm here to tell you, Wendy, I was probably within 3 months, four at the most, I proposed to her, and that's the longest I've ever, 23 years, so.
Congratulations.
But yeah, thank you, and it was all because of softball and the Parchment League, so.
And you have children?
Yes.
What are your kids' names?
I have, my oldest is Stacy, and I just got a call from her on the way to the interview. She'll be, Stacy will be 39. Tammy is 36.
Okay.
And Stephen from Harriet, that was from my first wife, the two girls.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have Stephen, who's 20, and this kid is quite a bowler. But anyway, Stephen and Roy is 18.
Okay.
So, they're kind of like half brothers and sisters, but it's, you know, for all the years that I found time to coach after for bowling, I've coached many, many years.
When you were working or since you retired?
No, while I was working.
While you were working.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, but anyway, Stephen, he's a 200-plus average bowler, and so is Roy, and I guess the best testament that, you know, you want to do the best for your kids. But, I mean, this is the first year that I've got him on our bowling team because he's Camp Bowling Juniors anymore, and he rolls a 687 series, which is almost a 230 average.
Uh-huh.
And I said, man, Steve, I don't know if I ever helped. He says, Dad, you know, when he was that big, I'd always buy the little plastic pens and stuff, and I would set them up for him in the living room while he was bowling. You know what? That meant a lot to him. And
really?
So he just told me thanks for all that stuff.
Yeah. Got him started on all that. Did you ever hang out in Parchment, though? Or was pretty much coming and going to work. You worked a lot.
We worked a lot, and there was a group of us, depending on who was on our shift when we got off. There was time to play a little bit, you know, other than the softball or the golf leagues that, you know, you had to be to.
Yeah.
Once in a great while, when you get off 11 to 7, you go to the Little Red Barn off of Mosel. It was to get a couple beers, whatever.
Yes, sure.
The place right up here next to the library.
Yeah, the State Farm Insurance now.
Yeah. There was a place, and John Lewis, Willie Fields, and I, and these two gentlemen were African American, if you will. I don't know a good way to play it. I never seen them that way. They were my friends. Willie and I just we golfed together. We did a lot together.
What was his last name?
William Fields.
William Fields. Okay.
Black gentleman, and John Lewis.
Uh huh.
While John was working at Parchment,
yeah,
he put in an application to go to Upjohn, and Willie and I would kind of help cover his shift for him. And he moved on. He left. But the thing about John Lewis was when I got him on the softball team, he would always bat cross-handed. The guy was just a bull.
Oh.
He would hit the ball, and he got so good at arm wrestling, there was actually some of the guys, he went to state competition because there was guys, we were always arm wrestling.
Yes.
And we progressed that on to the regionals.
Yeah.
And John was very good at this. And his brother, Oliver, was a Golden Gloves boxer.
Let's
so
see.
John, but the beauty of John and Willie was John also played a guitar and just was a very strong, he was a good guy to have you next to you on the parchment machines because he could lift up a shaft all by himself that was probably 200 pounds when a lot of us... We would try that. It wasn't, and we would do it, but it wasn't the best thing for your back.
Yeah.
John would pick it up, and we'd have to throw these shavs into these rolls of paper. But John and John Lewis and I went to Jamaica with our wives at that time. I mean, you know, you talk about it's one thing to work with someone, mm-hmm. but we even spent a week together. We went to Jamaica, and I've got some pictures in there of it, but that was way back in the early 70s. But you did a lot. They were they were friends, but they were pretty close to family back
sure
with everything.
Now you let me just ask you one more question and we'll wrap it up.
Okay.
Have you retired in 2000 when the mill closed, is that correct? You were here till the end.
I was there to the end. My why that will always stick in my mind is my mom was had been sick with cancer for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I had an opportunity to go to a Navy reunion in Colorado Springs. And I had got there, you know, it was like 3 weeks before the mill was going down, and I'd already had planned on this. And I got there, and of all the times, my mom chose to pass away.
Oh.
So I was the only brother, and my sisters, my brothers and sister were there, and I got a call and I had to say my goodbyes. To mom on the phone. So anyway, I beat myself up mm-hmm. about that, but I know that when I got back, there was only two more weeks.
I see.
And so that was a tough time, but I stayed right to the bitter end, if you will, because I had quite a bit of seniority at that time, and.
Did you take up any other kind of profession since you retired, or you're just enjoying yourself?
You know, when I left here, there was a place in Schoolcraft called Quality Films, and I thought it had something to do with the films like in a movie. But anyway, we made a transparent plastic sheet.
Mm-hmm.
For wrappings and whatever else, and I was there for about 3 years, and then the market hit them, and they had to fold. And I figured, you know what? It was never like me. I always needed to work. I wasn't the one to draw unemployment, and I know there's a reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I saw this job opening at Eaton Corporation in Three Rivers.
Yeah.
And I said, gosh, I wonder if they'd hire an old man like me. But anyway, I went down there and they hired me. And not because, but I found out on my interview that I had to interview with this guy named Hoagie Gaston. I said, you know, I know a Hoagie Gaston. There can't be two people like that. Oh. And Hoagie was of color and was a foreman at KVP for...
No kidding.
And that's where they'd let go of him earlier. I'm not saying that's how I got the job. But anyway, I got hired in there, and right now it's been 7 years. Because of the last 3 years with... 3 years ago, I had a 5-bypass open heart surgery. A year later, I had 7 stents put in. And last year, and this all happens on Veterans Day, which I'm a veteran. I love the vets. I had 1 stent put in. So I'm basically drawing disability.
Yeah.
And I just figured, you know what? I drive a couple days a week for an auto auction because I love people. I love talking with them to get out. And I figured, you know what, it's time for Roy to finally settle down, enjoy what life we all have left, because every day is a blessing on this earth. And so my wife is always trying to keep, you know, I'm I'm on a library board and school craft.
You are.
I've coached, and I still coach high school bowling for Schoolcraft High School. If somebody calls me up, and I just had for South County Community Services, there was a board opening. They wanted me, and I immediately said yes. When I got home, my wife wrote on a piece of paper all of the things I do. At the bottom, it made sense. She says, when is there going to be time for you?
Yeah.
So I very politely backed off, but I absolutely love the library.
Yes.
I love what they do.
The Schoolcraft Library?
Yes.
We're
in a expansion right now. We're going to make it bigger.
Yes.
And I was a part of that years ago, and because I had a full plate, I got off of that, but here recently, this year, they asked me, there was an opening, and I said I'd be delighted, because that truly is for people. And I don't care if you're in the rural areas, you live in the village, and it's not a district library, but but it's just, you know, with all the programs they have, with the computers... There's going to be a room for people to meet, and there's just they needed the expansion. But for people that to want to learn to read, I absolutely love. In the service, that's what I did. I read.
Yes.
And when I got out of the service, I didn't read so much. But so when I have down period, I absolutely love to read. I mean that's what keeps our minds going.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much.
I just wish I could remember some of the pertinent dates.
This has been great. We haven't had, that I know of, a lot of talk about the company and the union, somebody who was actively involved in the union. So, greatly added to the historical record here. So,
good.
Thanks so much, Roy.
You're welcome.